What is interesting with men and women that have low self-awareness, they often cause personal difficulties and significant organizational challenges, often not intentional.
This is the Aalto Leaders Insight podcast. In this podcast series, we discuss themes related to work, leadership, and today, emotions. My name is Reetta Räty, and our guest here is Aalto EE's senior advisor and faculty member, Ben Notnagel. Good to have you here, Ben.
Thank you, Reetta. Very nice to meet with you again.
The reason we are here today is that you and your colleague Ira Lang have been the key figures in designing the personal development process included in the Aalto EE programs. What actually happens in this process?
The personal development process in the executive MBA program, it's very much like any other, structured like any other module, the finance modules, the strategy modules. And what it means is that in all of these modules at Aalto Executive Education, we first look at what are the essentials, the fundamentals of strategy marketing. In this case, self-development. I don't know if the students like this, but my module runs with them for 18 months, the duration of their whole MBA. There is no difference in how much these modules count towards a graduation credit. But what is for me important is that the modules have a different format. They study the building blocks of self-development, neuroplasticity, stress and the impact of stress on cognitive function. So it's a knowledge module. Then they look at sparring partners in the MBA, people from the cohorts that they discuss with, develop with, build bonds of trust. They also go through a small coaching session with me face to face, where I look at their work and I suggest how they can practically apply some of the things they've learned.
So what is the aim of the process?
The aim for me is to establish in the minds of the students a very clear and important link between high cognitive function, personal development, high performance, well-being, and rewarding relationships.
Okay, I think today let's focus on self-awareness.
Yes.
How would you describe leaders with high self-awareness? And as always, it would be interesting to hear like real-life examples on this.
Yes.
So high self-awareness.
So leaders that I've seen have high self-awareness has a good understanding, not a deep necessarily, a good working knowledge of how their behavior, their thoughts, and their emotions impact on their own performance and their own well-being. And also how their behavior, thoughts, and emotions impact on relationships with the people they love, lead, or collaborate with. That's, in essence, self-awareness.
You know, I was wondering if this constant, like, self-reflection is tiring. Can you take a break, or is it going to mess things up? So can you have days like, I am what I am, deal with it? You know what I mean?
The self-awareness, I totally understand what you mean. And the self-development process do not at all promote constant self-reflection.
Okay. Tell me more.
I think like everything else, self-development, finds a structured slot in one's calendars when you have time for it, but you have to make time for it. But the notion that it's a deep reflection that is time-consuming is not part of what the self-development process suggests. In fact, it would be counterproductive.
So are you saying that this like high self-awareness is something you can practice?
Absolutely.
And how do you actually practice?
Well, there's multiple ways to practice this. But if I come back to cognitive function, so cognitive function is the processes in the brain that help us learn, remember, decide. So for self-awareness, it is important that you have cognitive function. Otherwise, it's just mindless. You're not aware of self. You don't think of self. And there's a variety of prominent, esteemed professors that talk about it. So Professor Ron Heifetz from Harvard says, paying attention is the currency of leadership. Ellen Langer says that if we're mindful, we are in context, we can make better decisions. And if we're mindless, we perform below our own intelligence and potential. So the essence of self-awareness is that you pay attention to self in moments that matter to you or moments that you have scheduled in your calendar. For instance, tomorrow morning, many of the students have applied this at home. So many of these participants are busy couples, young children, often in Finland, building a house somewhere. It's tight. So in the mornings, some participants have told me that it's hectic. The children don't act as fast as they should, the husband, the wife. So self-awareness could be tomorrow morning, the first 15 minutes before we leave the home, I'm going to create a joyous or effective or non-screaming environment.
So it's useful not only at work, but also with family, friends, etc.
I think it's useful in self. And if you are at work, it's useful. If you are at home, it's useful. If you are where self-awareness follow you.
Right.
So it covers all the facets of life.
Right. So this is high self-awareness. What about low self-awareness? How does that affect the team if we go back to workplace?
Yes. For me, low self-awareness means this. The leader loses information about the people in front of him, the emotions that go on, the situation. The low self-aware leader has less information and is therefore unable to choose solutions that make people collaborate better, perform better, implement better, or reach goals. And what is interesting with men and women that have low self-awareness, they often cause personal difficulties and significant organizational challenges. Not intentional, because they're non-aware. So if I want to do that on purpose, that's all right. But low self-awareness has a high cost in, well, first of all, personal misunderstanding, relationship failure, but organizational difficulties.
Right. I've heard you talk about internal and external self-awareness. So what's the difference between these two?
The term, I think, was coined by Professor Tasha Jurich. And she interviewed, I think, around 5,000 men and women in life. And she coined the phrase that self-awareness is, in fact, not a selfish, self-driven idea. It is based on two pillars. Internal self-awareness, are you aware of the patterns of behavior, not one-offs, patterns of behavior that you have, patterns of thoughts that you have that limit you or benefit you? Internal. External is, are you aware to understand how others perceive you? So self-awareness includes how I see myself and how aware I am how others see me.
Right. You have been part of so many different like leadership journeys, so to say, that I need to ask you some questions about that experience in a whole. What is usually the hardest part of the process?
It is interesting because in the executive MBA program, the vast majority of students that we attract are leaders with high potential and a successful track record, and they're very willing to learn. Sometimes in the tailor-made programs, there are leaders who are caught up in the process because they have to go there. The hardest part for me is the bias that we all have against self-awareness if we're uninformed. Most of us think it's a pseudo-psychological process that takes a lot of effort, is often a fault-finding mission, and I won't come unscathed. So then we resist it, of course. It's time-consuming. I think it's going to be too tough. It's going to be too difficult for me to do. That's hard. In the MBA process, executive MBA processes, what is hard for the students, I think, this module that I have competes against all the other modules. So the strategy professor may deliver a book to read, there's an exam to do, and I am adamant that this module gets as much time and energy on it, and therefore it's divided into 5 steps, and each step is graded.
Right. So it's not about trying to find mistakes on you.
Absolutely not. That is a different process. And self-awareness is looking for patterns of behavior that I have that may limit me or benefit me. And in the self-development process and self-awareness in the business school context, not in a psychological context, often asks questions starting with what. Not why. Why am I like this? Self-awareness, of course, depending on what science you're looking at, is absolutely valid. But in the self-development process, it does not try to look at why am I so bad.
Right.
It is more what can I do.
What about the easy part, if there is any? Like, what is easy about it? Kind of like the first steps we could all take quite easily.
Yes. What I've seen with the students, they're quite busy. So if one can find an article, in this case, Professor Tasso Jurek's article, that speaks about self-awareness in a very clear, concise way, the article demonstrates how to get it and what benefits you, especially if these articles create a feeling in the student, that's me. I recognize that in me. That is really. Then you get the other type of student that is not so interested in the big picture, says, it's easy for me if I can put it in my calendar. Can I do this tomorrow at that meeting, at that meeting, at that meeting? And then there's another category of students that I see is evolving, that is looking at how my values should drive my behavior. And they take the angle from exploring my values and turn values into behavior that supports. So there's 3 angles, really, that I see, mainstream angles I see how people approach it.
Right. Have you met people who think that this whole like self-awareness thing is unnecessary or at least not that important? Maybe it's not for me or for my kind of leadership or something like that?
Okay. Sure.
And what do you do then?
In the executive MBA programs, the amount of people who think like that are limited. And maybe this attitude is often driven also by insecurity. I don't want to reveal myself. Will this bring too much? Is it a resistance? In the executive MBA, my attitude is this. This may be harsh, but But if you want to graduate, you have to pass this module. There is a minimum requirement. The requirement includes expanding your knowledge, recording your insight, and practicing at least one of the insights you've had. And I can tell you that I can count on the fingers of my one hand over the years, with maybe 300, 400, 500, 600 Helsinki-based students, those who have not ultimately benefited in some shape from the self-development.
Right.
The starting point is also including, I'm defensive, I don't know, will I go there or not?
Okay.
But most of us do some sort of self-awareness throughout our lives.
Hopefully.
Yes.
Yeah. Is there a possibility that if you are really like paying attention to your emotions, and because of that, you end up being like a fake version of yourself? You're faking it. Is it possible?
So paying attention to your emotions, so paying attention in the brain activates cognitive function, your ability to think, to learn, to reason, to decide. The best version of you. So if you pay attention, that cognitive function is activated and you will probably make the best decision you can. If your nature is that of faking, cognitive function will try to give you information that says don't, because there's no future to faking. There is the possibility, but faking emotions and reacting to faking responses has no long-term benefit.
And it sounds tiring and stressful.
Very stressful.
I don't know.
Yes.
And you get caught, I think.
I think all of us fake from time to time.
Sure.
But what is nice in self-awareness is, if I ask you, do you fake behavior sometimes? And the answer is yes, it's fine. But do you have a pattern of behavior that fakes? And how does that help you, and how does that limit you?
Right.
So self-awareness is not about the one-offs.
Right, right.
It's the pattern.
Right. If you think about the feedback you get from the people taking part in the process, what kind of things come up? I guess that's what's the impact of the process?
Yes. It is as varied as the students. And I can tell you that most participants are surprised at the benefits they gained. A large group feel grateful that they've had the opportunity to pay attention to self, because they have already been suspecting that they're neglecting self. You know, a kilo here, a late night there, not fresh. What is interesting for me, a small group of people, these are very successful people with track records, who's probably got habits of overperforming and spending a little bit less time at home than they should, say that this has brought positive dimensions to the relationships with people they love. And I have seen people saying that the self-development process have bolstered their career possibilities. I have also seen people that say the self-development process helped them decide that for the next 3-4 years, they will focus on improving their parenting skills.
That's quite an impact, I would say. You know, Ben, a little while ago, I talked to Professor Timo Vuori for the Aalto Leaders Insight magazine.
Yes.
And he was telling me how important it is to pay attention to all the emotions at workplace. And you seem to talk about the same theme, like how important it is to notice the emotions and kind of use them for good. So just to kind of wrap up one more time, why are the emotions and I guess so-called EI, emotional intelligence, so important? Also in terms of business, like why is it so important?
Yes. So emotional intelligence, in short, says, let me take an engineering approach. So the engineers at MIT in Boston tell you, emotions are data sent by your body to your brain. And if you're mindful, you'll interpret that data and make a good decision. That's the engineering view.
Right. I'm like, I wish I would, but it makes sense.
And yes. It's pretty close to the truth, because emotions is how one responds to a changing world. So there's signals from the body. It lies in paying attention. Your ability to focus on a moment that is important for you or the people that love you or you love or lead triggers cognitive function, the ability to understand, to reason, to decide. So if you pay attention to the emotion and say, why am I impatient now? And how does me feeling impatient help the situation? But it's not a sequence of self-reflecting every emotion that you have that you go into a deep thinking cycle about. You select moments that matter to you. Maybe you look at the pattern of emotions. If you have a pattern of being irritated, a pattern of being insecure, a pattern of being jealous, so I'm going to look at when I get that emotion and how does that emotion affect my performance? And based on that information, what decision can I make?
Right, right.
Emotional intelligence is open-ended. It doesn't tell you to be good, to be bad, to be like that. It says it's your emotion. Cognitive function helps you understand information, gives you more choices on how to react when you get that emotion.
Right, and be mindful. Self-awareness might sound a bit self-centered.
Yes.
Even though, as you're telling, it's related to interaction with others. Could you clarify why we should get to know ourselves deeply rather than, you know, the ones around us?
Yes.
Or is there a conflict between these two or no?
I think Professor Tasha Yuri from Harvard's theory is the best. She says self-awareness stands on two legs. I don't think that in the self-development process, we promote knowing yourself deeply. Some people go deeper because they look at their values. The minimum entry is, do you know patterns of behavior that you have? So I think if we look at selfishness, I think it's people who are not self-aware, because then you exclude others and how you treat them from your choices.
Right.
But the idea is not that self-awareness and self-development is a 24/7 party pooper. It's not at all like that. It's, you can schedule it like you schedule everything else in your life. What is important is that you spend small moments per day, per week, regularly paying attention to behavior, right, emotions, and the information that you get from paying attention gives you knowledge. That knowledge gives you options. Those options give you possibilities to decide.
Right. When you teach about these themes and coach and talk, but if you yourself think about the whole like self-awareness theme, do you have any open questions or something you are trying to figure out or something you are working on? I don't know, something that keeps you awake at night? Hope not, but kind of something you're figuring out.
About 3-4 years ago, I was working with a client that I respect a lot, rather smart. And as we made our way back to the airport in the taxi, he said to me, "You really know a lot about self-development and what's good for you, but I don't see that you do much of it for yourself." That stuck with me.
Did you get defensive?
Not with him, because we've worked so long and I immediately knew that he's right. So that was a piece of information. And I understood that I share that with very many people. We neglect self. And or I don't constantly prioritize my own needs. And this is very interesting. Tasha Jurich, when I did the assessment, tells me that I have low internal self-awareness and high external self-awareness, meaning I see what others want. I can see what they want, so I want to deliver to them, but I neglect self. And the category that it comes into is you're a pleaser, which sounds like a B-grade movie, but it doesn't mean I'm a pleaser all my life in this situation. And I realize that I often, as somebody that knows what others expect of me or how I want to be seen, I will overperform for them at the risk then of not having enough time for the things that matter to me. And I will do that because I have low internal self-awareness. So from this, I learned to just a little bit increase internal self-awareness.
Right, right.
No judgments, you know, but what can happen? But so feedback from people in one's network that is constructive, honest, valuable.
Right, right. So if you should give a leader or anyone, I guess, one practical tip on managing emotions at the workplace, what would it be? Like a practical tip.
Yes. Some years ago, you and I spoke about the Should I Be tool. And this is the most practical. The Should I Be tool asks you to recognize an emotion that you're getting, and you believe that emotion drives behavior that no longer benefits you, like anger, irritation, jealousy, insecurity. So the most practical thing is to stay authentic, is not to control that emotion, to recognize that you're getting it, and then say, should I be angry? Should I be irritated? Should I be? The should I be question promotes cognitive function. So the emotion is there, the question is there, frontal, cognitive function like decision making is there, and very soon you will get an answer, yes or no.
Should I?
Should I be angry? The benefit of the should I questions, if the answer is yes. Yes, I should be angry because I've explained this to you 100 times. What we see now is the emotion of anger persists plus cognitive function. Now you can be smart angry. You can articulate yourself. Whereas controlling emotion says, oh, one should never be angry in those situations. Controlling or driving down emotions. So the should I tool I've seen with many leaders, those that in high conflict situations understand that they should feel conflicted, threatened, but they invite the brain in. The should I question invite your brain to, together with your emotion, state your case. If you don't ask, should I, then it's only your emotions, which are often unthinking, stating your case.
So let's pay attention. Should I tool? Should I question?
Yes.
We need to end this conversation soon, but before that, a few just very short questions and short answers, I guess. What's the relationship between mindfulness and self-awareness, if there is any?
Absolutely important, pivotal relationship. Mindfulness, if you look at the definitions maybe of Professor Ellen Langer and others, mindfulness really says pay attention without judgment. So I pay attention to the moment, and it's only when you pay attention that self-awareness is conscious. Otherwise, without paying attention, self-awareness is just vague, unstructured. So I would say mindfulness and self-awareness are natural partners that should travel together often.
Right. What about empathy and self-awareness?
Empathy is the ability. There are multiple decisions. The ability may be to put myself in your shoes. So some people say they have cognitive empathy. I can understand that if you have lived through that situation, you must have suffered. Some people tell us that they have emotional empathy. They can feel your suffering. I think empathy roughly would fall under the category of, do I have a pattern to understand other people's situation? Is empathy acting on that? Or is that where empathy stops? Does empathy include compassion? So empathy fits for me both in external and internal self-awareness. Empathy is, do I know how other people will perceive me if I'm not kind, if I'm too tough? That's self-empathy. Yeah, it's interesting. I think the primary beneficiary of empathy is the person who shows it. Because before you can show empathy, you have to notice me. You have to pay attention to me. And once I pay attention, I have all the skills, all the decision-making, all the memory, the learning skills to make the best decision I can.
Right. Okay, one more. What about the relationship between self-leadership and self-awareness?
I really like this. Because for me, self-awareness is the process of knowing the information that I have of how my patterns of information, how my patterns of behavior affect me, how my thoughts affect me, how my patterns of behavior affect the people I love or lead. That's self-awareness. Self-leadership is, what will you do about it? Or doing something about it. So self-awareness is not a passive skill. But self-leadership is activating the insight you got from self-awareness, in my opinion.
There you go. Thank you. Kiitos paljon, Ben, for talking to us about these themes. It really was a pleasure. And now, everybody, let's try to be self-aware, right?
Time flies with you, Reta. I wasn't aware that this is over already. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.